Blog Talk Radio.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I like that. That's how you start a Friday. That song could actually play through the whole show over and over, but I know my man L.A. would not allow that to happen. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. You hear it right now? Okay, maybe he was going to do that. Well, good morning, everyone. This is Barry Barnes, a host of Locker Talk. Well, you hear me right now, currently on Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. This is the place where you'll hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. It's good to hear from you. It's good to actually speak to you guys this morning. Last week, my wife and I were celebrating our 15-year anniversary, so I was not on air last week. So please forgive me if you was looking to hear what I had to say about the world of sports. But I'm back this week. Tia and I are very happy. I just want to say thank you, you know, for tuning in again this week as I talk to you about some good football stuff. But kind of going in a different direction today, and I have to actually credit my kids on this one, that when we got back home and all that good stuff, everything was going fine, and my oldest son, who I talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago, Zaire, who played for St. Francis High School football, he was actually on his way to go to practice. And so my 7-year-old, my wife and I have 4 boys, and I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old that's going to play football. My 7-year-old is going to play football for the first time this year. Last year, he was in tears, crying, you know, heavily. I mean, like really crying. That he could not play last year. I said, you know, once you get a little bigger, you know, bulk up a little bit, you know, get you ready, because he's on the small side. He's on the small side, but it's okay. You know, but he's playing football this year, and he was ready to go out for, take him out to practice to get those guys in shape. And so when Zaire was leaving out to go to practice, Zana said, "Hey, Dad, Zaire's about to go play football, right?" And I said, "Yep." And he said that, are you worried about him getting hurt? And I said, no, I mean, it's a party game. And then all of a sudden, my 12-year-old, Zakari, who don't want to play no sports at all, you know, he said, "Dad, isn't there some high risk playing football?" And I said, "It is, just like everything." And Zayla had cut me off in a conversation. And he said, "Yep, Zakari, that's risk in everything." And so when I said, "Yes, that's true, they are risk in everything that you do," that's when they had brought up the conversation about concussion. And so that's when Zaylin had asked, you know, what are my chances of getting concussions and playing football? I said the chances are there. You know, it's something that can't be ignored. I told him what concussions are and how it happens, that if you take a sharp blow to the head and if your brain rattles around a little bit and hit up against the skull, that's how a concussion is, you know, it started. And so that's when, you know, he went on, you know, to say that, you know, he loved football. And I said, "I do too." And so he said, "Well, if the Lord got me covered from a lot of things, I know he'll protect me from that." And I said, "Yes, the Lord got you covered." But it really sparked the conversation, knowing that my 10-year-old, 7-year-old, and 12-year-old, you know, talk about the concussion piece. And that's something that I do not hide from them. You know, I talked to them about that, and it actually had me to wonder, this should be something I should talk about on the show, because I do have information on concussions, working with NFL football operations and knowing some of the things that they're trying to do to help cut down, minimize concussions. I know concussions cannot be stopped. I know that's a part of the game, but trying to minimize it is something that the NFL is definitely working on. Still continue to work on to improve. The style of the game has changed, and many fans hate the way how the rules have changed because of it. You know, because they say it's taken away from the game of football. You're making it soft. Well, they're not making it soft. They're actually making it safer. And they also looking at, far as on the business side of football, far as its players and the players themselves look at football and approach football in a different way, but still attack it kind of the same way, far as performance wise. You know, so in today's show, I'm gonna pretty much talk about, the ups and downs with football. Talk about the positives. There's more positives than negatives, you know, with football. I feel as though I have to defend a sport that I love, and talk about a couple of things of how it's being attacked, which I do not like. I don't like the fact that it's one thing to have critic or writers or family or friends or people close to the sport. It's okay for people to make their judgments about football or speak about football and attack football because, you know, a lot of them haven't played the game, really don't understand it, and they're looking at it from the outside and going along with reports. But there is one thing that I don't like is that when you had players, legends, by the way, coming out talking against, football, like the Troy Aikmans of the world, and Brett Favre a couple of weeks ago, when he talked about how he believes tackling should not be a part of football until the child reached the age of 12. You know, Troy Aikman, one of the players speaking out and saying he wouldn't let his son play football, and several other guys. And that's the part that I really do not like. That's the part that I can't tolerate, because these men have made their fortune off the game. These men use football to get them to where they are in their careers, into their life, and for them to attack football the way they are doing. You know, for me, that's more of a hypocrite in itself. And that's the part I don't like. That's the part I can't tolerate in the attacking of football. We had a young man named Chris Brewin from the 49ers a little over a year ago, how he retired from the game of football at the age of 24, playing for the 49ers. And after one successful year as a rookie, he wound up retiring from the game of football because he was worried about the head injuries of the game and did not want to subject himself to long-term problems. Now, not every person will play football, have long-term issues. It's just like any other job. If you're working at a factory, I used to work for General Motors years ago, and there were men that had came out of working in the plant in bad health, but you had more that did not come out with bad health and still was able to retire and live a healthy life after working in the plant, even when there was asbestos was a part of the, I would say, the manufacturing of the plants. And the Peroni Highway is no longer here in Baltimore. I worked in that environment, and fortunately, I'm okay. But you had Mr. Brolin come out, retire, and he was one of the they label him as a high-profile guy. I didn't look at him as a high-profile guy. He only had one good year, and I will promise you that if a player who was in their prime playing in the NFL would not retire because they weren't about concussion, because they see that the opportunity of making it big in the league to set their families up for generations to come, they will not walk away from the game. Chris, on the other hand, did something a little different because, he had a plan. He's using CTE as a stage for himself to be able to make it successful on the business side. So he just opted out a little early just to navigate into something else. But we're going to go on a short break. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about more about youth sports, about concussions, the ups and downs, and also let you know that football is not the biggest sport you have to worry about in receiving concussions. I'll talk to you right when I come back from this short break.
Hey there, this is L.A. Bachelor, host of the Bachelor Pad Show from the Bachelor Pad Network, inviting you to tune in on Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, for the Donaldson File with your hosts Tom Donaldson and Coco Cosney. They bring politics and other perspectives from the left and from the right. The Donaldson Files every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
Question to me through Twitter at @Locker_report or Facebook at LockReport.com. All right, now, all right, back to talking about concussion with youth sports and everything. So I'm going to get into a lot of stuff about that. So if you have a pen and paper ready to hear some things, I'm going to write down some stats and give you some information, and also give you some information about NCAA rules for if you have a child that's interested in playing football on a collegiate level. I do have some good stuff for you, so if you have something to write down, jot down, please write it down, because I'm quite for sure that you will find it interesting. Okay, we're at the start around this part of the year where youth football is starting to, you know, get going fast with their spring workouts, pretty much just getting in shape. No one is using pads or helmets, just pretty much doing a lot of drills, running around, you know, getting their stamina up, you know, for the course of the season, you know, finding out, you know, what where the kids would be at far as position-wise, what would, you know, make them more effective to have more playing time so that you can watch your kids, you know, play a great game. When it comes down to football, we all know about concussion piece, and America put everything out there about football and attacking the game. In the NFL, is the shield. You know, I love the NFL. I love football. Played it, you know, growing up myself, and now my boys, three of my four boys are now, you know, playing the sport. And so it's really a joy to watch them. But I know that you have parents out there that's a little concerned about the game. And we know that youth sports, according to reports, that the participation of youth playing football is down a little bit. And it's all right. It's okay, because I look at football as being the greatest interpretation of life. You know, through life, you're going to have your struggles. You cannot be successful completely all by yourself. You will have help here and there. You know, we have some people that's self-made, businessmen and women in this country. They didn't do it all completely by themselves. They had some help. And you're always going to need that help in life. And football shows how a group of men can come together for one goal. And when you have people in your corner that's on one page, one accord to try to succeed in doing something in life and something that you hope to have in life. You know, football challenges you mentally, challenges you physically. If there's something you want to achieve, football is one of those interpretations that tell you guys, hey, listen, if you want to achieve this, this is what you have to go through in order to get there. And life is all about sacrifice. To be successful in football, there are sacrifices that need to be made. If you want to succeed in life, there are sacrifices you have to make. You know, you're not going to be able to go and hang out with your friends late at night. You know, there's certain things you're going to have to put down and put away. You will have to probably go to sleep a little earlier to be ready for the next day. You will have to say no to certain things and certain, I would say, peer pressures that you experience. You're going to have to go through that. And football helped you to understand that. And that's why I love it so much, because it helped bring people together. And there's nothing like seeing a bunch of grown men come together for one goal. It's fantastic. But when it comes down to stats, and I want you to check these numbers out as I want to talk about how football is being attacked, and you can tell by the popularity of the sport, which shows that. According to, you know, headcase.com, football concussions rates at around 64%. That's the, you know, the highest in quote-unquote team sports. And then what follows by number two is boys ice hockey at 54%. When you look at boys lacrosse, that comes in third at 40%, anywhere between 40 to 46%. Girls soccer, now I don't know what girls are doing on the soccer field, but they come in fourth at 33%. You know, young ladies got to slow down out there. And then followed behind that is girls lacrosse, around 31% to 35%. Now, when you look at all those sports that come behind football, these are not big-time sports in the United States. You know, hockey is popular, but it's not among the top four. You know, they're still, you know, still behind NBA, still behind Major League Baseball. So hockey is not going to be in everyone's face. So no one is screaming about hockey, about, you know, the levels of concussion in that sport. And we all know that soccer across this country is not big time for us professional sports. So they're not receiving, you know, the backlash about concussions in the sport. And also one sport in particular that's way higher than football, which is skateboarding. No, wow, you know, you look at skateboarding and people say it's not a sport. Well, due to X Games and, you know, Tony Hawk and these great guys that competed on a high level and helped make this X sport so big, that is the sport that you have more concussions in. And that rates around 89 to 91% of concussions in that sport. And when you think about skateboarding and from these statistics, that skateboarding is a mentality. And it actually, with skateboarding, is a symbol of rebellion. You know, you have, you know, kids that's attacking, you know, a lot of, you know, suburban white kids in this sport that want to live recklessly and want to rebel in a sense of saying, hey, listen, I'm going to do this stunt. No one's going to stop me. It's just the mentality of that particular sport that they can define heights. And these kids really, you know, get in the air. And it's amazing how they're able to attain that sport, how they execute that particular sport. So it's the mentality, and it's almost like a symbol of rebellion. And you have more kids that's more prone to that, and majority of the kids that's prone to that are your suburban, you know, white kids, you know, that want to get into that sport. And we know that no one is really going to attack, you know, that sport because it's generally a white sport, so to speak. But concussions are much higher in skateboarding, and lack of protection. And unlike football will always have the right people around to help your kids if they were to get injured. You know, football will have people there to immediately to assist to make sure nothing goes on worse after the act was committed. Skateboarding, totally different because, like I said, it's prone as being a rebellious sport. So they're going to do it somewhere off-site where it's not going to be a lot of attention or a lot of supervision. So when they get injured, and it could be a long-term effect. But football, at least you will have the right help there. Now, that's very, very important. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to cut out, talk to my man in L.A., because his show comes up right after this show at 9:30. He always have great stuff to say and great stuff to talk about. And after I introduce my man in L.A., I'm going to get back to some good stuff about concussion, talk about a little NCAA stuff. But just before I go on, just want to hear what L.A. has to say. L.A., my man, are you there?
I'm here, Barry, and I don't really have much to talk about our show. You know, we're going to do a little music and some other stuff after you, but I am interested in those statistics you got. I'm really intrigued, and you make a lot of sense. It's the higher of the demand or the popularity, obviously, the cases will probably be higher if I'm understanding you based on your stats. So rock on. I'm really in tune to this, and I know people are as well, and I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ellie. I appreciate you allowing me to talk about this. You're listening to Locker Talk right now on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder of locker-report.com. Check the site out anytime. Shoot me any question anytime at Barry Barnes at locker-report.com, or also on Twitter, locker_report. Okay, now back to some fun stuff. Now, I did talk about skateboarding, how crazy that sport is. You kids get more concussions in that sport, and you won't talk about it too much. It's pretty much a YouTube generation, and X Games is a big factor of that. And these guys, if they get on YouTube, and I think probably with all these devastating crashes they have, they think it's cool, but they really messing themselves up. But you don't have a major outcry from the public in the United States in regards to that sport and concussion. So we're going to leave it at that on that one. So I left that out there for you. Now, talking about youth football, like I said, kids getting ripped up and all that good stuff. Now, I have rules when I go to, you know, football. I don't say nothing to the coaches because the coaches know what I do, and I keep my opinions to myself, and I put the confidence inside there. But one of the things I will say is, parents, when your kids are playing football at the age of 7 and up to around the age of 12 or whatever, listen, guys, don't go out there on the field and expect your kids to be like Tom Brady and throw the ball down the field, or they think they Todd Gurley as a running back, or they think they're a big-time receiver, you know, on the field trying to do all kinds of highlights on the field. Don't go out there thinking your kid's going to do that, because the fact of the matter, most of those kids are not. They're going to be very sloppy. Don't go out there and try to push your kids to try to be something they are not, and don't fuss at them, because at that tender age of football, It should be all about fun, because the point of the matter is, although my kids want to play football, they love the game, but they really don't know. So let your kids go out there and have fun. If that team don't win, so what? They're out there, they're having fun. They are learning the game. None of them are professionals. None of them is going straight to high school after they get finished playing eighth youth football. They're not going to high school. They don't have no college looking at them at the age of 9. So don't go out there fussing and yelling at your kids. Let them have fun, because they're still trying to learn the game. Let them play the game and let them rule to themselves and say, Mom and Dad, I don't want to play this game no more. At least you know they gave it a shot and they tried to play football and they don't like it no more. But when you get out there and you're trying to push them and you fussing at them and you want them to be something great at the age of 6, you're messing them up, you're taking the fun away from the game, and you're not allowing the game to help them to really make a real good decision about that particular sport. So don't do that. If you are part of a program and you have coaches that's cussing and carrying on, fussing at your kids because you're not doing all this and that, and being really disrespectful, especially at the age of 6 and 7 years old, I would advise you to take it from that program, because all they're doing is destroying the confidence of your kids while they're trying to play a game that they're actually learning to know how to play. So if that's the case, move along, put them in another program. Look for a good program, number 3, that's teaching the kids to play the game properly. And that's something that the NFL is reaching down to work with you football to teach the game the proper way. So when it's time for those guys to actually get to college, or whether they get to high school, get to college, and if some of them do make the professional league, the league will be in a shift where hitting with the helmet, spearing, would pretty much be removed from the game, because the kids are learning how to play and how to execute on the field. So get with a program with some coaches that's teaching football properly. Now, when they get to the age of 12 and 14, towards being the age of accountability, okay, Mom, Dad, hey, you know, football is like this the path career that I want to go. You know, I think this is what I want to do. From that point on, you want to support them. That's the part you want to support them, you know. And then you educate your kids to use football. Do not let football use you. I'm going to say that one more time. Use football. Use it. Use it, use it, use it. But do not let football use you. And meaning by that is that you take all the positives of football, especially at a young age, and make it work for you, and also have to make it work for your kids. Now, not every child is going to make it to the NFL. It's not going to happen. We know the percentage is very low for kids to actually get to that professional level in football. However, the chances for your kids to actually earn some type of a scholarship to play football, earn a free education, that's what it's all about, folks, learning, trying to get a free education. That's what it's all about. And if your kid is good enough to receive a scholarship from a Division One or Division Two or Division Three or the NAIA, do playing football, so be it. That's money that you don't have to worry about putting out. That's money where your kids don't necessarily have to be in debt for a very long time. That's the part where you use football for your benefit. Now, around that age of being the age of 14, now this is where I want you guys to have something to write down. If you don't have it now, listen to the podcast later and record this information. Now, as far as NCAA rules, what you have to do when they get into the ninth grade, now, you can have your child take the SATs at the grade level of the ninth grade. They can take it, and we recommend them to take the SAT oftentimes. I mean, as many times they possibly can, because if your child is looking to play collegiate football or pretty much any sport with NCAA, they will look at the highest score that you have through your SATs. And if you want them to be eligible and, you know, they want the information they need, and they need the, and you guys need the information to know how to be eligible for NCAA. If you have any questions, write down this number. The number is 877-262-1492. Again, the number is 877-262-1492. They will explain to you everything that you need to do to make sure that your child is eligible for being accepted into an NCAA school. Now, when they're in the ninth grade, you know, have your counselor list a couple of courses that the NCAA look at to try to take them in classes. That's something they can do in the ninth grade. In the 10th grade, I want you to write this down. You can register them at the NCAA Eligibility Center, and it's the website is eligibilitycenter.org. So you write that down, eligibilitycenter.org. They can go there to make them, that your kids eligible for anything with the NCAA. That's what you can do. And when you have that set up, you can, you know, you can find all the information. They'll let you know even when you get to the SATs in your area. They'll give you all the breakdown from there. Now, this is one right here. Now, if you have a child that was labeled with ADHD, it's very important that if your child is diagnosed with that, if you feel as though that they are labeled with, you know, that symptom, have them checked out and have them on paper stating that they are diagnosed with that symptom. You want them to be diagnosed by the time they are sophomores in high school. The reason why you have to have that, because if your child doesn't do well in school with academics, if your child, if it's on paper that they're diagnosed with that symptom, the GP for a regular child that's trying to get into college, which is a 2.0, if your child is labeled with that diagnosis, their grade point level will be expected much lower. So it's very important that by the time these sophomores in high school, make sure that it's on paper that they're diagnosed with that symptom, because if they are in the NCAA, look at their GPA, and they see it is really low, but if they have the documentation that their son is actually labeled with that diagnosis, your grade point average for that child is much lower, so they can be able to be acceptable to be able to get a scholarship or be eligible to play on the next level. So it's very important. I hope y'all written those numbers down. You've written that site down. Contact the information. Get this information early so that you'll know what to do, especially if your child comes to you and say, "Mom and Dad, I want to play collegiate football or basketball." These rules apply for all sports across NCAA. Just if, when they get to the age of accountability and they want to use football for themselves to get that free education and set themselves up, that's where your guys come in at. Thank you guys for tuning in to Locker Talk. I will talk to you guys next week. And a couple of weeks from now, I'll be in Dallas with the NFL officials, getting ready for the NFL officiating clinic. I'll talk about a lot of that stuff next week. Everyone, stay blessed. Thanks for tuning in. I'd like to talk to the Best Fan Radio Network. Be blessed.
Good man, to the good, that's all I want to be. Thoughts I know gon' upset you. Never doing things that I ain't got no business doing. When you're around, when you're not around, I respect you. And I would never make a fool out your baby.
No, no.
No, I never make a fool out your baby.
No, no, no.
I'm making sure you can trust me beyond the shadow of a doubt. So when them bras run up on you with my name in their mouth, you tell them you can be gone with all that. Cause you know what we got is beyond all that. You know we got that real thing. Gonna be the object of some hating. Hey, but we gon' be alright, we gon' be alright. Making love after every fight. Girl, from the day I put that ring up on your hand, in front of friends and fam, I had a plan. And my plan is to be a good man, cause that's all I wanna be. Hey. So I wanna be, baby. So I wanna be. Said I want to be a good man, cause that's all I want, my baby. Said it's all I wanna be, baby. All I wanna be. Oh, oh, la la.
Yeah.
and been feeling that way. But I just know that we did things back then that we have been done in a minute. Not saying I miss the old, I miss when we used to go places for no occasion. You used to touch me for no apparent reason. Boy, I really miss those days.
Yes, I do.
And I haven't been feeling that way.
On the record with White House correspondent April Ryan.
Hi, Don.
Hi, April. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, guess what? I am so honored, everyone, to have one of my favorite people ever. He's very controversial, but he's a good guy. He's the host of CNN Tonight. I'm speaking of none other than Don Lemon. Don to the Lemon. Hello, Don, again.
Hello, April. I can't believe you're telling me that I'm controversial. Look at you.
I know. It takes one to know one. But here's the thing. I mean, it's interesting, though. I mean, we're real people. Beyond being on TV, I think, you know, what makes us who we are and why people really watch us or like us is because we bring our truth to the table, no matter whether you like it or not. And Don, what is your truth right now in this moment in time for a time such as this?
Wow, that's a big and broad question. My truth is telling the truth. I think that there's so many lies and there's so much spin there. And my truth is that I'm an American who happens to be a journalist, and I have a platform to bring truth and knowledge and information to people every day. I also am an American who happens to be a man of color, who happens to be a gay man, and I come to life with all those experiences, very well aware of all those experiences, and I think it's important to have that as an American. That's my point of view as an American, and I think that's important to share to the world, because I think what I embody, what my ancestors came here for, and what happened to them, should be portrayed in the media and not forgotten. And we should make sure that those issues come to the fore and that they're taken care of.
Your show has gotten a lot of hype from your number one fan, the President of the United States, Donald John Trump. What has he called you? He's called you some very ugly things. He's called you dumb or stupid or something. And he doesn't like your show. But, I mean, he watches it, apparently. What happened between you two?
Listen, I don't know. He granted me a lot of interviews during the election. And then, you know, once it became clear, because, you know, you have every candidate on. And you'd ask them questions, and you didn't really have a chance to dig into some things that you wanted to dig in on. And so, but when it came down to the point where, okay, this person may get the nomination, I think that we have to pivot. And I think we have to become even more serious because we had to become even more serious because he could have ended up being the leader of the free world, which he did end up being. And so just through my honesty about his certain answers, I think that he didn't like it. And also you have to remember, you know, we were, for a time there, we were focusing on, what, 17, 18, 19 people up on that stage.
Right.
And although Donald Trump garnered a lot of the attention, he wasn't the sole person. And also then we had Hillary Clinton on the other side. So I think when the spotlight really hit him, and I had to start digging down on his personality and who he is and what he said, I think that's when he started not liking, you know, me, or he took issue to some of the things that I said because it didn't paint him in a good light.
And you know
that, so you can answer that all day long. You know what that means.
So right now, I mean, and you know, watching your show, I love watching your show at night because, and not just because I'm on, but I love to hear your take, your unique take on issues. I may not agree personally, or I may agree, but you'll never know. But when you come out, you're very honest and open, and a lot of times you're slamming this president. I've heard you maybe once or twice, you know, give him some props. But you're slamming him, and that leads to him calling you fake and calling you enemy. And you're unpatriotic for this. What do you say? You know, particularly...
I don't care.
You don't care, but I mean, particularly... Go ahead.
I don't really care what he says. I think it's... For me, it's more detrimental when he denounces the media, demonizes the media overall. Personally, this is not about me personally. I don't really pay attention to that. But even just to answer your question before, why is he so critical of me? He's critical of me because I'm the truth, because I'm standing in my own truth as an American, as a black man, and I'm not going to let you pull the wool over my eyes or try to, you know, state things that are not facts. And so that's my thing, and I'm there to give my point of view and to give the news, whether people like it or not. And if what you're doing doesn't align with the facts, then too bad.
Huh.
Sorry.
Well,
that's how journalism works. You know that.
Well, this week, you know, the zero tolerance policy has been in the news, and you were very emotional about it when you were reading your open a couple nights. And, you know, you brought yourself to it. Who are we right now? I mean, this is a crazy time when you have first ladies, to include his own wife, saying that they don't like this inhumane issue of zero tolerance. And the president's coming out talking about on Twitter, you know, that talking about illegal aliens are infesting the country, or an infestation or something of the country. And yet he's separating parents from children at the border, and there's a concern about tracking these kids and reunifying them with their parents. As a journalist, as an anchor, do you think it's time for emotion, or do you think it's time for fact?
I think it's time for, you can have both. You can have emotion and fact. You can be factual and you can be emotional at the same time. I think it's in fact the most important, but you have to have behind that, you have to have some passion, and sometimes that passion can reveal itself as emotion. And just because you have emotion doesn't mean that you are emotional, where you're not making sense. So I think it's important for all of us to be human, and especially now journalists to feel their human side. I have a friend who's reporting from the border now who happens to be a Mexican-American, and I told him that not to be bullied or allow people to think that he has to have some form of fake objectivity, that he is not, that he should not bring who he is to the table. And of course he should. So that's, I think it's important to be strategic, fact-based, and emotional if it's authentic.
And you know,
that's how you feel, do it.
Yeah, and that's the argument for us, for journalists right now. You know, people want to call us activists. You know, what's her name? Amy Kramer or whatever her name is. She came out after me saying I'm an activist journalist. I'm like, no. You know, because she looked crazy on the air the other night screaming about her dog. She cries for her dog over these children.
Yeah,
but I mean, yeah, and then you have, I know, but you have a lot of people who feel that, you know, because we ask questions, where are we? Who are we? They feel that because we're asking questions and it may not suit with what they really like, it may not fit with what they really like, they think that, you know, we are activists and things of that nature. So what do you think about that? I mean, who are we right now at a time like this?
Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with being an activist journalist if that's your role.
But that's not my role, let me say that.
That is a bad term.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if that's not your role, then that's fine. But I think in this climate, speaking the truth can be seen as activism. It can also be seen as partisan when it's not. Because facts are nonpartisan, they're non-biased, and it doesn't mean that they're active in the sense that they are, you're pushing an agenda. Your agenda, if there's any, is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone doesn't want to hear that, then they may want to call you an activist, because in order for you to explain to them and to the public that what you're saying is not true, then I guess you're actively pointing out the truth, which they don't like. So I don't think that, I don't see you as an activist journalist. I see you as a journalist who has been around and who knows when someone is giving you bullshit. And you have every right, as a matter of fact, you have a duty to point that out. And so if someone wants to call you a name or call you an activist, April, that's their problem. It says more about them than it says about you, because people get upset when you tell them the truth. They don't like it. And that's an issue with this administration. And it is a reason why, from earlier in our conversation, that the president calls me out or he has issues with me. Because I will tell him when he's lying, and I will tell his supporters and anybody else when he's lying. And I'm not saying it just because it's him. I'm saying it because he happens to be the person who's in the position that we're supposed to be turning a critical eye to and reporting on. So if this is another person in the White House, I would say the same thing. But he takes it personally. He thinks it's just him. It's not.
So you use the word lie now. I mean, early on, we were kind of all dancing around it. Was that hard? I mean, in this business, that is a very, very strong word. And to say that someone lies, and to say a president of the United States lies, how hard was that for you as a journalist, as someone who's been in this business for a long time, to just call it out? Because we danced around it for so long.
It was hard, but I did it, I think, before everybody. I think I did it before you guys. I just did it. Listen, I'm not trying to pretend, you know, or I'm not trying to use less strong language, or I'm not trying to sugarcoat things for anybody. That's not my job as a journalist. This isn't Romper Room. This is not the Kids News Hour. This is the news. And so, you know, I came to the conclusion that this president lies. He lies more than any president that in modern history, if ever at all. So we have a duty as journalists to point that out. So very early on, I said the president was lying. I called him a liar. And I said it's difficult to sit here on television and say that because I have respect for the office, but it's harder when you have more respect for the office than the person who's sitting in it.
Hmm. Don, how long have you been in the business?
But a lie is a lie.
A lie is a lie.
A lie is a lie. A lie is a lie. I've been in the business since 1992. I started out as a low-level production assistant / news assistant, trainee in the newsroom, and worked my way up.
Yeah.
I know.
Since 91, we've seen a lot of change. And people ask me, you know, we have seen, I mean, just in this last 4 or 5 years, I mean, I believe social media has played a big part. But, you know, the more that we see, the more change that happens, I think the dynamic of journalism will change and even the delivery systems and what have you. But where do you think we're going with the envelope being pushed as far as it's been, I mean, from calling us fake and enemies to social media to getting news that may not necessarily, you know, be as factual from blogs or citizen journalists. And I mean, we're in a whole different realm. I mean, this is something our founding fathers did not imagine. I mean, where are we going?
No. How could they? I wish I could tell you where we're going. I hope that we're going back to soon fact-based news and reality. But I actually think for a time now we're going to become even more divided, if that's possible. And
politically, journalistically?
Politically, journalistically, as a country, race-wise, I think we're going to become more, because it plays. Instead of trying to bring people together and broaching the subject seriously, right, this president uses it to his advantage to help his political, to help him gain political points. And that is very dangerous. But he's doing it, and it appears to be working for him. So if it's working for him, then why wouldn't he continue to do it? Why would he stop?
And the next president who's running for office is watching. So... And that's the thing. They take their cues from what someone else has done or was allowed to do prior to. Don, in the remaining moments that we have, is there anything else you'd like to offer to our listeners and to those who love you, even those who hate you? Because that is a dynamic now. We're in a, you either love or hate us. It's not any gray area anymore, it seems.
Listen, if you hate me, I would suggest that you tune in. You should start tuning in and watching and really listening to what I have to say. But I would say to those people who are out there, because I know there are a lot of people who are discouraged, with Republicans and Democrats, who are concerned about the direction of the country, not only economically, right, because we're doing well economically thanks to Obama setting this president up, you know, very nicely with the economy. But I think that, remember that presidencies come with term limits. And so however long we have with him, 2 years or 6 years, whatever, and listen, I'm not saying this because I support him or not support him, that's not my job, and you understand that as a gentleman.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who are upset there. Remember, that comes with a term limit, and one day he will be out of office. And so for those who support